Well, Ivan, great to have you back on the pod, second time on the show, and I'd love to just dive deep into NLP and the revolution behind it. But before we get into that, Ivan, for our listeners, I'd love to if you can give us a quick intro about yourself and your background into AI and NLP.
Yeah, certainly. So, my own background, I studied computer science at Stanford. I've been working in the industry for the last decade or so, building AI products. I also had the good fortune of studying under Andrew Ng and Fei-Fei Li at Stanford. So it's been really cool just to see their careers kind of blossom into the global superstars that they are now. I've spent time at both small and large companies building AI products. Most recently, I was over at Apple, leading some of their NLP developments. And now I've been at, I started Datasor 5 years ago. I'm the CEO and co-founder here, and we focus on building data training platforms for all forms of NLP, including LLMs, as I'm sure we'll get into here.
Amazing. Such a fantastic background, especially with the thought leaders you mentioned. I love that. I'd love to hear from your experience, if you can share maybe a pivotal moment in your career that kind of like solidified your path in AI and NLP and kind of like how that has had an impact or influenced Datasor's mission.
Certainly. There's one very specific moment. It was when I was first at Yahoo. I'd sold my first startup to Yahoo, and I thought I was going to take over the Yahoo Games portal. But instead, they asked me to work on these new machine learning projects instead. And one of my first tasks was to replace a decade-old search system with machine learning. And my team and I were able to do that in just 3 months. We replaced all these hundreds, thousands of heuristics with one machine learning model. And at that point, my eyes were opened as to just how powerful this technology really could be.
I love that. And when was this?
This was back in 2013. So we've been through many AI hype cycles. 2013 is when, AI and NLP and computer vision were first getting popular again.
Yeah, right. Right on. I mean, I've seen like when it comes to like, this large amount of data, especially one case I worked with was kind of analyzing customer feedback to improve the product, as a PM essentially. We had to have this NLP, very basic version actually, to sift through thousands of customer reviews to identify key themes and areas for improvement. And as a PM, I love that because I can spend more time on the creative side and mapping, make sure that the whole experience is seamless. And this was a huge pain for our case, right? So certainly relate to what you mentioned at Yahoo as well. Now let's talk about the NLP trends, because you mentioned you've been through multiple cycles. What's the current state of NLP industry and some of the recent advancements from what you've seen, Ivan?
Well, I guess the big news was that ChatGPT was released about a year and a half ago now, right? And so that really transformed the entire AI landscape. And it took everyone by surprise. From what I've heard, even OpenAI themselves thought they were just releasing this kind of like toy and demo into the world, but it really took the world by storm. So over the last year and a half, we've seen an insane amount of growth and activity and investment into this new LLM technology, right? Just to get terminology straight for the rest of today's podcast, LLMs are large language models, specifically having to do with, ChatGPT style text-based technology, whereas generative AI is the broader term for everything from generating text to generating images, like DALL-E and Midjourney through to generating videos now, like Sora. But we're going to focus here on LLMs. I think the LLM industry is, there's so many people working on it, so many people excited by it, that this is a rate of innovation I have never seen any time before in my career. It seems like every week or two, we are seeing some new breakthrough, some new hot startup, some new technique, research paper that comes out that kind of like breaks the barriers of whatever we thought was possible before. Things that we thought would be, would have been big headline news a couple of years ago seems to just be eclipsed, every week, every month, and we're on to the next thing. So I think it's been really exciting to be kind of in the eye of the storm here. But I'm also, it feels like a lot of this is like, okay, the technology is here. Everyone's waiting to see what are the breakthrough use cases and how will this actually change day-to-day life for many people.
Totally. And like, just also to set the foundation, right? I've kind of like got some background into understanding how, because I, you know, even back in the day, because just OpenAI has been around for a while. And what was the pivotal moment that this whole, you know, large language models started to become a thing?
Well, I think there are multiple milestones that people talk about, right? So for example, the T in ChatGPT stands for transformer. And funny enough, that was actually a technology that was invented by Google. The transformer technology has been around for years, but it was OpenAI that really wanted to invest in it and push it to the next level. As you can tell from the nomenclature, we have GPT 3.5, 4.0, which means there was a GPT 1 and a 2 and a 3 before all of this, right? Now, those were powerful models, and certainly some in the data science community were already excited by what GPT 2 and 3 could do already. But there was a breakthrough where it turns out if you add enough training data to the model, it develops emergent properties, and it's able to do things that we would never have been able to expect. And that basically was 3.5, right? There was a milestone reached where suddenly this 3.5 iteration of an existing product was really just incredible to the mainstream, and it went viral, and it became the most successful consumer product we've ever seen in terms of like rate to adoption to 100 million users.
Totally. And what do you think is contributing to this such shorter cycles of like, wow, it's like Sora came out a few weeks ago. It just keeps coming up. You know, what do you think is contributing to that? Like the cycle is getting shorter and shorter. Like what's happening?
Well, it's almost like an arms race of sorts, right? I liken this landscape. I'm based here in Silicon Valley, and I look at Google, Amazon, and Microsoft almost like Game of Thrones style families, all competing with one another and looking to one up one another, right? And there's different alliances and partnerships being drawn up. So I think there's just an insane amount of money and time and effort and resources being thrown at the problem. I think it also coincides with a lot of advancements on the hardware side. So NVIDIA is obviously doing very well these days in terms of their stock price. But, you know, to a certain extent, there's been a lot of things that build up to this perfect timing moment. NVIDIA was spending a lot on GPU chips because of the crypto craze from a few years back, right? So they were well positioned to take advantage of this moment in AI. And we have both the hardware as well as the software and technology breakthroughs to support one another.
Yeah, it's such a good point in drawing the dots there and how it all kind of like came together. And the advancements are indeed crazy. I've seen like some of the NLP models that they're able to actually understand the slang and colloquial language on social media posts. And it's very interesting because, you know, the nature of the language does evolve by the time. And then how they can keep up with these is incredible. So that's awesome, man. So let's just get into the best practices, right? So in NLP specifically, because I know that's your focus. Would love to get your insights on, you know, when it comes to data collection and the design and build of NLP power products. How would you look at that, and what are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So before I dive into best practices, let me set the stage for what we're seeing on the front lines here. I think that as we've alluded to, ChatGPT is incredibly successful on the mainstream consumer side of things, right? But in order to build this out for specific use cases, there's a lot of companies that are still iterating and developing and figuring out what exactly those final products look like. The way I see it, 2023 was the year of kind of building out proof of concepts and experimentation. There were a lot of people, you know, just fiddling on their own computers and figuring out like what could potentially work and presenting it to their executives and saying, hey, I'd like to get funding for this project, right? But in 2024, we see a lot more of these companies coming to us and saying, well, we don't want to just adopt LLM for LLM's sake or for technology's sake. We need actual business results. And so now we're seeing a lot of companies focus on like, what can we actually impact with these LLMs? Is it going to generate revenue for our company? Is it going to save our company a lot of time and resources? These are the questions that people need to answer. So my first best practice is not really a technical one or a product related one. It's more so how do you approach this conversation, right? You need to align your personal interest in LLM technology with those of your business. What can you promise? Are we going to be able to save our employees 40% time in dealing with customer support tickets? Are we going to be able to generate new business ideas that, you know, we would never have been able to fulfill otherwise, right? Being able to speak the language of like, this is how it impacts our bottom line as a company is going to be the first step in actually procuring budget from your executives for the project you want to pursue.
That's such a good point. And thanks for setting the stage about that, because it's real, you know, I mean, it's everyone's thinking about it. It's around the corner, right? And you know, it's also see it as a part of like how it could be a differentiator, because as we know, data is gold. Proprietary data is gold when it comes to a lot of these LLMs. It's kind of basically a race to the bottom from at least what I see. And whoever's got most proprietary data, that's like one of the major factors into this. So the other part is also about, you know, what I've seen is that a lot of companies don't even know where to start. It's like, okay, it's great that we can put this thing ChatGPT kind of like chat for support. But like, to your point is like, yeah, tying it to the business metric, but also like, I've seen a lot of cases that like, okay, we know this thing could happen, but it seems like a lack, at least from my consulting experience, that of like, we don't even have a broader strategy when it comes to AI, because what that means is that it's like basically for a lot of cases, gutting out the whole data infrastructure and position it in a way and build up in a way that's actually able to support such models. What are your thoughts about that?
No, exactly. I think that's correct. It's the difference between, I mean, a lot of companies have performance reviews and kind of goal setting, right? It's the difference between saying your goal is I want to implement Llama 2 for our company versus I'm going to save I'm going to create an internal knowledge base that will save every employee at the company 20% time in searching for the right answer for their question, right? So just making sure that you really are framing it in the right way to help acknowledge the business need and the requirement for funding. Sorry, what was your question again? I think I lost track.
No, that's cool. No, I just like, we kind of sidetrack a little bit talking about, you know, to your point, like before even going down the rabbit hole of talking about technical side of the best practices, just setting the stage right. So just my point was kind of a follow-up to that, from that perspective. But from like a, when it comes to, you know, let's say like one of the parts when it comes to like the models itself, like, you know, labeling itself, labeling data, it's timely. It's not cheap. And I know DataSir, you guys have different products for that. So I would love to get your thoughts when it comes to, you know, how we may save time and money when it comes to labeling data.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to labeling data, first of all, data labeling has shifted significantly in the world of LLMs. In the past, there used to be more of a correct and incorrect answer, right? If you were doing something like sentiment analysis, whether it is positive, neutral, or negative, there was a correct answer for that. If you're labeling entities like the date and the organization in a sentence, there's a correct answer for that. LLM labeling is a little bit different because there could be multiple correct answers. For example, let's say somebody is asking, like, how do I reset my password? There could be anything from, in order to reset your password, go to this website to click on this link, right? Or in order to reset your password, click on this link and set a password that follows these protocols. Both of those answers are actually correct. One is more detailed than the other. So this requires a lot more nuance, and that means there's a lot more subject matter expertise. We work with companies in the legal, the healthcare, the financial space, where, you know, you and I, Cyrus, would not necessarily be able to answer these questions properly, right? You need someone with subject matter expertise, and there's a lot of nuance. There's something that might read correct to you and I from an English perspective, but from a legal perspective, if it doesn't use the exact correct terminology, that answer is not correct. So the first thing is data labeling and data collection just got significantly more complex. LLMs are so much more advanced that it goes beyond basic human knowledge into like expert knowledge. The second thing I want to talk through is data labeling in such a way that you are correctly capturing the data for both past, present, and future cases. What does that mean? First, again, just setting context, LLMs are innovating at such a rapid pace that there might be use cases that worked a couple weeks ago that no longer work today, right? OpenAI is constantly training and retraining their models. They might get compliance requests from Europe. They might get sued by the New York Times. And for these reasons, they have to constantly update their models. But because it's a giant black box, people are starting to report that, you know, the question it was able to answer a couple of weeks ago doesn't work today. So we enforce this concept of regression testing. It works very similar to unit testing in engineering. You basically start saving all of these answers that are the correct gold set answers. And you want to save those for the future so that every week, every 2 weeks, you can run all the existing gold set answers against the current version of the model and understand if anything is broken that was previously working. And I think that's really important in production. You don't want your user-facing chatbot to suddenly, you know, regress worse than a previous state.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, there is a thing, right? The drift. There was an article I was reading about the drift of GPT and the weightings and everything else. And one factor, to your point, is exactly all these lawsuits that come up, and then they do the regression, and then you don't get the same answer, essentially, right? So.
That's right.
And that affects user experience, right? But also there's a real-time use cases that the companies have to deal with.
That's right. The other flip side of this is it also gets to future-proof your product. So you spent all this time and money developing this current model. Well, we've heard rumors now that Llama 3 is actually going to be released later this year in summer of 2024. And so you want to build your model in such a way that, you know, if you're on Mistral or Llama 2 today, you can evaluate and see if you want to migrate to Llama 3 in the future. So storing all of this existing data, all these correct answers that you've spent, you know, real legal hours, accounting hours, medical expert hours on, you want to store all of that so that when you do get Llama 3, first, you can evaluate how well it does. But second, you can use this data to fine-tune Llama 3 and really help your model take a big step forward, right? Or decide against it and you want to be conservative and make sure it works exactly as expected. We don't want to upgrade. So these are decisions that data scientists are starting to face now that they're in production environments and there are real-world consequences.
Yeah, and that, to your point, it's just getting... The labeling is just getting more complex because there's multiple correct answers and also all these model shifts and migration to the latest ones and whatnot. So what kind of role, you know, what are some potential, you know, approaches to this? Are there like good automations around this or like, what are your thoughts over that?
Yeah. So I think that a lot of these are still being standardized and being developed by industry, right? So we at DataSOAR, we've been building a lot of our own internal models and helping clients build theirs. So we've discovered a lot of the best practices. For example, this concept of unit testing and making sure that, you know, we actually store these prompts and check in every couple of weeks to make sure that all the existing use cases still work today, that's built into our system. So as you collect the responses, as you collect this data for free, you can actually test that. We also allow you to swap out different foundation models. This goes back to the rate of innovation, right? Every other week, there's this new foundation model that seems to do really well on the leaderboards and beats GPT-4 at something. But data scientists are confused today. They don't know where to start because everything seems to have their own strengths and weaknesses. So we actually integrate with 120 of the top foundation models today. And that allows data scientists to quickly say like, hey, let me check out this new Mixtral model that just launched. Let me check out this Falcon model and see if that performs better or worse. So being able to rapidly swap out technologies and test them against that ground truth data set, that's a big part of the kind of approach and philosophy in how we design our product.
I love that. What are your thoughts about best practices when it comes to scaling, LLM POCs into production level environments and kind of the obstacles that come with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think scaling oftentimes comes down to three major factors, right? Quality, speed, and cost. So I will say in our experience, you can't beat GPT-4 for overall out-of-the-box quality and performance at this time, right? But people's OpenAI bills are starting to rack up. So is that a good trade-off? You have to decide, again, coming back to the business goals that you set out for yourself, what cost are you willing to take in order to trade for quality, right? If you're a medical or a legal company, maybe quality is the top most priority. And even if it takes 30 seconds per answer, even if it takes, four times the cost of the next best model, that's worth it for a 15% improvement in quality. But if you're building something for customer support, then your users don't want to wait 30 seconds per answer, and you're willing to take a 20% reduction in quality just to get an answer out to your user faster, right? What volume are you looking at every single month? If it's millions of queries per month, you're going to have very different cost considerations compared to, somebody else who's only doing hundreds of queries per month. So this is kind of the first step of questioning that we usually give in terms of scalability.
Yeah. It's all about trade-offs, right? And what use case it is and what the business is all about, right? That's what it boils down to. On a higher level. And I actually remember while we're talking about this, about the complexity of multiple truths, but also I've seen a case of, NLPs trying to understand the user intent in search queries, right? Because different people, they see it differently. And so how would it label it correctly? Because every person is different, right? So I think that's also, I'm not sure from your experience, but I was reading about it the other day. And that's how that kind of like could even further complicate this whole process.
That's absolutely right. That's been an age-old problem in the world of data labeling, right? Like even think back to, a traditional use case like movie ratings. I remember being in charge of this at previous companies. And it's like, what do we consider family friendly, right? You and I might have different answers on that. Different countries and different cultures have different traditional norms on this. So it's really important to set the labeling guidelines and understand what the, what the rules are at the outset.
Yeah, totally. So it's talking about talk about the labeling itself for a bit. Would love to get your thoughts when it comes to best practices for the LLM model training itself. What are your thoughts there?
I think in terms of model training, model training is such a large term, right? I think you have to consider what your goals are and how much time, like what the timeline is and how many resources you want to put into it. So for example, RLHF was a very hyped up technique last year that everyone was talking about. But we see in practice, not many companies are actually at a stage where they can or want to invest in RLHF. Fine tuning is the more common practice, but even that requires a conversation around budget. Who are we going to hire to do the labeling and all of that? One thing that I think is underestimated is chunking techniques. This is getting pretty technical, but we've found that this made one of the biggest differences in terms of quality improvement. So choosing your chunking technique, chunking again at a high level is the ability, is how you break down a document. Let's say you're looking at a receipt, right? Do you just chunk line by line? Do you group items? Do you group like the top left of it is all going to be one chunk, the center part where all of the individual billing goods are another chunk, and then the total is a different chunk? Like customizing the chunking relative to your input data can make a huge difference in whether LLMs will actually retrieve the right answer or not, right? So I think it's going to vary case by case, and there's not any universal guidelines like recommendations I can make for model training. But there are many different parts of the process you can change, not just the fine tuning itself.
Yeah. I love that. A lot of slice and dice and look at how that could change the outcome, right? So I didn't know about that. I'm going to look that up. awesome. So let's talk about some of the applications across industries, because you mentioned yourself and also DataSir. Would love to hear if you can share with us maybe a case study, an example where DataSir's NLP technology had a significant impact on any of the industries you work on, and you know, what are the key factors that contributed to the success?
Yeah, certainly. So I think one public case study we've done is actually with a law firm called Von Wobeser. They approached us, and our contact there was very, had already done a lot of his research and knew exactly what he wanted out of a custom solution. So this is where that best practice for knowing your business goals comes from, right? He knew very well what his business goals were and what would appease his committee. And so we started talking about what a custom solution looked like for them. There were a lot of compliance and privacy requirements. Like all of this has to be hosted on their servers. Nothing ever leaves their premises because of client attorney privileges, right? So we had this discussion, and then we were able to build, at the end of the day, a chatbot that was customized to their tasks. So ChatGPT is an amazing mainstream tool. It can answer everything about, you know, Oscar-winning movies through to recipes, through to travel arrangements. But what we're seeing in industry is that you don't need to do 99% of the things that a large language model can do. What you want to do is handle a handful of specific use cases. So in working with Von Wobeser, we narrowed it down to three or four categories of questions. Things like summarizing a document or generating a template, a legal template for something, or understanding, you know, what's weird about this NDA that's not industry standard across most NDAs, right? So being able to narrow it down to a handful of use cases, and again, building in those tests to make sure that, you know, we agree and are aligned on what a quality answer looks like, I think that's what worked really well in this partnership.
I love that. And how did you ensure that consistency of the model itself? Like, you know, because that's something I've noticed, that a lot of LLMs are great at, you know, brainstorming, creativity, hallucination. But yeah, how did you ensure that?
Yeah, a lot of that was done through the prompt engineering and the fine tuning, right? Like we wanted to tell this model, hey, you're a legal expert. If you're being asked about your opinion on the latest, you know, movies, then tell us, I'm here. It'll respond with, I am a legal expert. I'm here to answer legal questions, right? So that kind of carves out a large portion of things where people might ask it all these bogus questions and get kind of silly answers. This truly, we really tried to focus it on just helping with legal use cases. We also taught it to say like, hey, if you don't know the answer, please just tell us you don't know. because we really don't want it hallucinating and sharing answers that people then go and make important decisions based off of that are incorrect. So we did a lot of, we put a lot of guardrails in place to try and guarantee these answers were as constrained and as correct as possible.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm saying is setting also these temperatures, right?
That's right.
Especially very like deterministic, just zero. Like don't need to just go crazy. Just tell us what you see in this basic training, right? So, and also the other thing you touched on, which is very interesting, and that's a trend I see in the industry, is like the whole concept of AI agents. They're just good at one small task. And that seems to be like where, you know, LLMs could really have an upper hand. Do you also think that's like a trend that's gonna come up next in the industry itself? Like you see that a lot of these agents focus on one specific task, one or two very specific tasks?
Yes, I do see that as being the future of the industry. Instead of one kind of GPT to rule them all, or even one for a specific sector, like one model just for the entire healthcare sector, I think that every organization will be deploying multiple models. Every team will have multiple models for very specific use cases. I think that not only is it better for accuracy and performance, it's also just a much more efficient method. So there is a technique referred to as LLM distillation. LLM distillation is taking this very large model with, you know, billions of parameters and creating a much smaller, much more efficient model with fewer parameters that can do this particular task equally well or sometimes even better, right? It's kind of like, think about hiring an employee. Do you want a genius jack of all trades that is like pretty good at everything across the board? Or do you want to hire specific employees that are very specialized in what they need to do, right? That, I think, is what we're going to end up doing with these models. We're going to have very narrowly defined models that excel at very specific things, and you will get answers faster. You will get them significantly cheaper. We're talking a whole order of magnitude cheaper, and they're easier to maintain. You can kind of like correct for these use cases while not impacting, you know, the marketing department across the street because you changed part of your model.
Yeah, well, you were talking about jack of all trades and being generalist, you know, product managers for broader skills. I think we are generalists, right? So does that mean that we're gonna be put out of job first, you think?
I think a lot of the hype around, or a lot of the fears around job loss are overblown, right? And I think we just need to look at history to show that, like, we thought Excel spreadsheets would put accountants out of business. Now we just have accountants who know how to use spreadsheets. We thought that calculators would put mathematicians out of business, or that we would never have to learn how to do math again. But now we just incorporate calculator capabilities into our knowledge. So I think we're just having an overblown moment of PR when it comes to job loss.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. All right. I mean, the last time we came on the pod, we specifically drilled down on ethics itself. Now, I mean, it has to be part of every conversation. So when it comes to, you know, ethical considerations for NLP itself, like what sort of measures do you take to ensure that, that ethical use of NLP isn't applied, and kind of like the balance between innovation, you know, that we need to have to kind of like propel, but also the responsibility to protect the user privacy and ensure fairness.
Yeah, I think that I'm concerned we are moving too quickly. 15 years ago, the mantra of Silicon Valley, thanks to Facebook, was move fast and break things. And then that became uncool for a little while as we realized that breaking things has pretty detrimental effects on society. In the last year and a half, I have seen everybody go back to racing to release things or announce things in order to, you know, one up their competitors and to make a big splash out there. I think it is important to think about the implications. Now, the good news is I think people have learned from previous mistakes, and there is a lot of concern about the implications of these technologies, right? People have correctly identified that this is going to increase the amount of spam of social engineering attacks. It just amplifies by multiple orders of magnitude what bad actors are able to do. Here in the US, there's a lot of concern about this impacting the US election, presidential election this year, and around the world, right? There's a lot of important elections this year. I also think that this technology is incredibly US-centric so far, or Western country-centric. Almost all of the top models are trained here in the US, probably on US training data or training data that is representative of a lot of kind of US views. We are working with an organization in Singapore that is training a foundation model that from the ground up is built on local training data, local customs, local colloquialisms, right? And so I think we will see models spring up that are good for different regions of the world. Mistral is famous for being fluent at 5 different European languages, but there are over 200 active human languages in the world, and we need to see foundation models be developed for all of these in order to ensure that the technology is being deployed fairly and everyone gets the benefits of these technologies across the board, right? So there is no solution. I'm not offering a solution here, but I do think that the fact that the conversations are happening, that people are worried, that actually is a good sign.
It's so funny you say it, man. And in a broader conversation, like, you know, if you go to a lot of the major hubs around the world, all the buildings look the same. And a lot of the kids who've been to boarding school, you know, they're all like pretty Americanized, even the way they talk, their culture. And like, oh yeah, I grew up in Singapore, but I mean, you sound American, you know, all the pop culture, yeah. The buildings look the same. So I think it's also that part of it as well. That's like, everything is looking like the same, right? And I think it is important to maintain the authenticity of local cultures. And that's, I think it's a different topic, but also relevant to this from how you're saying it.
Yeah. Well, I think data privacy and bias is a big part of this, right? And we talked a little bit about data privacy and you know what we're doing to support companies that have those compliance and regulations in place. But I think bias is equally important here, starting with the data labeling process and you know making sure that people do have consistent answers for these things. But bias is everything from you know making incorrect answers or subjective answers through to we just have very different sense of like what is and is not appropriate, right? So when people start asking ChatGPT very politically charged questions or controversial questions that even human society can't agree on, what do you expect these models to come up with, right? That's the problem when you don't have a constrained use case and you claim to just answer anything universally.
Yeah, just I think we all remember what happened to Gemini last week about that whole setup, right? So that's I guess an example of that.
Yeah.
And how it impacted Google's stock. I think it went down by a decent amount just as that happened, right? So such a good call. Cool. Well, talking about the future, I think we spent a lot of time just going through different angles of NLP. Itself, but what are some of the most exciting developments? I mean, you're deep in a rabbit hole that you anticipate in the NLP itself and AI overall, let's say, in the next decade. And I'd love to also hear how DataSphere is positioning itself to be part of that.
Well, as a kind of day-to-day user of these technologies, I am excited. I mean, I use ChatGPT on a fairly regular basis for a lot of my work, double-checking kind of my posts, my emails. So it's already become kind of a daily habit for me. One of the trends I'm paying attention to, again, Sora was announced to a lot of hype a few weeks ago. I call this digital alchemy, right? I think we're in this world where transformers, encoders, decoders, you can basically take any input and output anything else. We've seen this already happen with text to image and image to text. There is a startup that does this specifically for audio as well. And so they're able to basically, you can put in any song request you want and it'll generate a song for you with surprising results, or surprisingly impressive results. And then Sora's doing this with video, right? So we will get to a point where you can just say, hey, I want a 1 minute YouTube ad for DataSora that has this tone and incorporates these elements into it, right? It won't be perfect and it'll take more editing afterwards. And again, I don't think video editing jobs are going away, but it gives you a good running head start. And so I am excited for a world where like a generation is going to grow up with these kinds of creative tools, right? We already saw what happened when you put an iPhone in everyone's hand. We have things like YouTube and Instagram and TikTok, where it unlocks a new type of human creativity. What happens when we combine that with generative AI as a whole, right? I'm not purely a tech optimist. I don't think this is going to have purely positive results on the world. There will be things that we have to mitigate as well. But I do think that it will unlock new capabilities that may seem very futuristic to us at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's a lot. And NVIDIA CEO the other day, I heard him talking about, and he's talking about back in the day, you had kind of like teach your kids how to code, and it shouldn't be the case anymore. You know, just it should be natural language. And I think that was an interesting part too, like the whole multimodal side of, the language itself, right? So I also do think that there's a lot on the horizon, and I like your take on it, because it's there's going to be a lot of hiccups, in my opinion, as well. But eventually, there's a lot of potential. It's just that I think a lot of us don't know how exactly it's going to pan out, but the outcome is obvious to us that it will kind of be like a catapult to our next iteration, if you will. You know, so that's how I've come to kind of understand this and kind of be in terms of it, you know, when it comes to day-to-day life and how it's going to affect society.
Let me add this too. I think the last tech revolution that I got to participate in was the mobile app store, right? The iPhone was launched and everybody talks about the iPhone being this huge turning point for society. And certainly it was from a hardware perspective, right? But what people don't remember was the iPhone could only do three things. It could play music, it could browse the internet, and it could make phone calls. That's it. It wasn't until the introduction of the App Store that it could do many of the things that we associate with it today. But even in those first two, maybe even 3 years of the App Store, we had very silly, very limited applications, right? You could have like a noise generator or a flashlight application or whatever else. Like, they were very basic applications. It took 3 to 4 years of innovation, investment, and human creativity to create truly mobile native innovations. Things like Uber and Airbnb and even Yelp, right? Like, these are things that were enabled by having a location-based, a location-centric device, an internet device in your pocket at all times. So I think we're still very early days in Gen AI, right? All these technology improvements, very exciting. But what are the LLM native products that really enable the next, you know, major platform or breakthrough in a specific use case or industry? I don't have the answer to that. If I did, you know, I'd be off building that, but that's what I'm really excited to go see.
Yeah. And I think I read somewhere was saying that, you know, we as, you know, Homo sapiens and human species only leverage about 5% of our brain capacity or something like that. Very like low percentage, which is like, you know, the capacity is a lot, the creativity is a lot more in us. And I think, just building on what you said, AI could help us come up with new ways of learning so we can unlock a lot more of that. And then that could be kind of like propelling us forward, you know, because the way we know how things are based on the education system, and everything's out there. But what if there are other ways for us to look at this and be able to unlock, you know, full creativity of our brains, right? So that's also another take on it.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. So, you know, as we come up to the end of this talk, which I really enjoy talking with you, like any final piece of advice, you know, would you give to any product manager, entrepreneur looking to integrate NLP into their products or services?
I think that my biggest advice, career advice to young and mature professionals alike, this technology is not going away anytime soon, and it is not going to replace jobs, but it is absolutely something that will augment, if not your role, then the folks that you compete with, right? So I think it is important for everyone to explore and to start learning all of this. I think you can become an expert in 3 months' time. This is such a new technology. There's no such thing as like a five-year vet of LLMs, right? So anybody can go and become an expert at this. So think through like how this impacts your job. We've heard use cases in everywhere from like real estate to construction to marketing to agriculture, right? Like it's really all over the place. So I really think this can impact arguably any industry out there. So play around with it, learn some prompt engineering, and figure out how this can, at the worst case, you know, save you 10%, 20% of your own time at your job.
I love that. That's such a positive spin. Ivan, thank you so much. This was a great discussion, and I look forward to our future chats.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody looking to give our platform a whirl, feel free to reach out, ivan@datastore.ai. I think the one plug that I'll have here is it's also completely free to use, right? So if people want to be building out models from open source, if they want to build something that is both historically, you know, there's regression tests built in and future proof, then please shoot me an email.
Yes, I'll be the first one. So I'm going to also add the link to the website and your email to the show notes. Yeah, really good stuff you guys are doing, and excited to see what comes next for you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Cyrus.